Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Vance, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Vance, lighter, stronger, better! I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me in a world where Jack got a better job and is making more money than I paid him, Melody Lauer.
Choo 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 choo.
I like that one. You should keep that one. You're okay. Stuck with that one. Now look what you did.
Now it won't. Now the question is, can I remember it for next week? I'll put in my notes right here. Look at that. Intro.
Also, semi in the room is Michael Grasso. So, hi, Michael. How are you?
How are you guys?
Good. And joining us on the phone is going to be Kathy Jackson. But before we get there, I have a very important thing that I need to talk about.
What's that, John?
It's our very favorite little boy from down the street.
Aww.
This segment brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors, or at least it used to be. But now we have the technology to fight the night. And TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. From the TNV PVS-14 Night Vision Goggle to the Maul C1 Plus and everything in between, TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. Doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, or that little kid from down the street that likes to wander off. Maybe he's looking for his pogs or his Jenko jeans or, I don't know, his Zune.
What happened to his jeans that he lost them?
I don't know.
Maybe. Although Jenkos, they were hard to hold up.
There's that. I don't know. Anyway, TNVC has what you need to find things in the dark. TNVC now with financing. Own or finance the night. So joining us is Kathy Jackson. Kathy, how are you?
I am doing well.
I feel like
Thank you so much for having me on.
It's okay. I feel like we just talked. Isn't time travel cool? I think it's kind of scary. I mean, I'm scared right now, but it's neat. So
because it's so easy to panic you, I can tell.
Yeah, it's incredibly easy to panic me. I mean, if whipping the bra out and saying, hey, try this on in front of like 40 or 50 people didn't do it,
I'm not sure which part was more delicious, watching you try the bra on or looking at Caleb Causey's face when he's all, yeah, I'll tackle you while you're wearing a bra and other people are recording this.
Yeah, you know, so had I known that all it was going to take to get Caleb to sit in my lap was to put a pink bra on, I'd have done that years ago. Years ago.
Okay, just so you know, that is totally going in my quotes file.
That's fine. That's fine. You can do that. So speaking of time travel, it is now, what is today's date? Today's date is now 1, 2, 3. It's June 4th. Isn't that cool? That's so cool right now. I know.
Time really flies when you're having fun.
Exactly. So last time you were on, we were talking about kind of like thought crime in the tactical community and the role that beginning instructors play. Now, you kind of, and I don't know if you've officially announced it or not, but you kind of brought it up last episode. You said that it was a training company, but you're not training right now. What does that mean, Kathy?
It means that I have stepped away from teaching classes. I will still have an active website. I will still be writing. In fact, I have several books that are coming out on the topic of instructing. But I'm no longer teaching live classes. My husband and I had a business opportunity in a in a different place.
Yeah.
Where we are going to go off and do that for a while and enjoy ourselves doing that. And I sincerely hope the training industry can get along without me. I'm not sure how they can.
Right? So I guess my I had a question, and then I looked at Facebook, and it left. Oh, I kind of know what the question is. So like you and I are kind of interesting in that we get along really well. We share quite a few of the same points of view on a myriad number of topics, but there's also several things, and we don't need to get into them right now, but like several fundamental things that you and I disagree on. And I remember, it was really interesting that you and Don were showing me something when we were out in Texas together. And then afterwards, we had a really long conversation about it that like an outsider might have seen as like confrontational, but was just kind of me bringing some stuff up and talking about it and trying to have a better understanding before I really commented in depth. But how important do you think having other people challenge your ideas is to presenting good information and material to students?
Hugely important. Hugely important. And it's one of the reasons why I really encourage people who are thinking about instructing to get as wide an experience within the industry as they possibly can, to take classes from not just from within their own school or within their own mindset, but from people that they think they don't agree with. Because unless your ideas are challenged, you have no idea how robust they are. That's first of all. Second of all, adults learn by tying information together.
Right.
That's how we learn. You have, as a grown-up, you've had a huge number of experiences in your life. You've been a lot of places. You've seen a lot of things. I haven't been all the same places that you have. You haven't been all the same places that I have.
No.
You haven't had the same experiences that I've had. But so when I set out to teach you something, if your experiences don't match what I'm teaching, they can't be easily reconciled with what I'm teaching. We have two options. One is you keep your lip buttoned and you never tell me, hey, we disagree.
Right.
And in that case, either my presentation or my material itself will never get any better. It will never evolve or grow to encompass the types of experiences you have had. Your other option, you know, you could just button your lip, or you could say, hey, we disagree on this, and here's why. When we have that conversation, we disagree on this, and here's why, that's your brain trying to fit the new knowledge that I just gave you into your existing experience. That's a growth point for you.
Right.
When you give me that feedback, I have to then incorporate it into my material. That's a growth point for me. We can both grow by that. So the idea that, oh, I can develop everything in perfect, pristine isolation and then deliver it as though from Mount Sinai, you know, Moses coming down from the mountaintop with the Ten Commandments, thou shalt carry this type of gun, thou shalt only use this type of holster, thou shalt always use only this technique and ever this technique, regardless of whether you're physiologically suited for that, whatever. I could present it perfect from the mountaintop. But then if it doesn't fit into somebody else's life, they won't take even the parts of it that would fit. They won't take any part of it because it's been poisoned by my unwillingness to listen.
Do you think that – would you say that the majority of instructors or – yeah, and this is a clumsy way to ask this question. I apologize, but do you think that every instructor that gets into instructing is only interested in bettering their students? Are they more interested in wearing the special hat that they think gives them extra respect and makes them special? That is instructor bunny ears.
I want to quote John Farnham on this one.
Please.
I love John Farnham. He's brilliant.
Yeah.
I took an instructor development class from him year before last, and I've taken a few other classes from him around him.
I know you're pulling up the quote now. We've got about 50 seconds left in this segment.
Here we go. The instructor and the student have the same goal, that is the improvement of the student. I love John, I respect him, and I don't agree with his quote, simply because I would just add one more word to it. The good instructor and the student have the same goal.
Right.
But there are a lot of instructors who, like you say, they're up there to wear the special hat. And I think that happens because we don't have metrics that easily measure the improvement of the student. We don't actually know what we're doing, and so we start measuring things that aren't necessarily where they need to be.
Now, this is going to be interesting. So let's pause right there, and then we'll hop right into that. We're talking with Kathy Jackson from the Corner Cat. Michael Grasso is joining us. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories, Daniel Vance, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. Legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 style match grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability with a modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Kathy Jackson. We're joined by Michael Grasso as well. Melody Lauer is co-hosting. And Kathy, right before the break, you said something interesting that I'm not going to lie, elicited a bit of an emotional response from me, which I found intriguing. And you said that we don't have metrics to measure the improvement of the students. Do you mind clarifying that a little bit before I comment?
Because you're jumping up and down right now and you're saying, but FBI qual.
No.
But fast test.
I'm a little...
And yet.
It's funny because for as much as I like to make fun of Pincus, one of the things that I think he says that is really intelligent is that we have this fascination with performance on timer drills without necessarily putting as much focus on ability to process information or de-escalate problems or whatever. And I actually clean that up a lot nicer than the way he says it. And whatever. So like, I'm of two different minds on this, but I'd like to hear what you have to say before I offer my opinion. I'm sure Michael would like to hear what you have to say before he offers his opinion as well. And Melody is just making a face like, did you find something else funny on the computer?
No, I'm laughing at you.
You're laughing at me.
I'm laughing strictly at you.
Okay, you can laugh at me. You're not allowed to laugh at the computer. Anyway, Kathy, you have the speaking giraffe.
So here we go. Two things. First of all, we can definitely measure whether the student is shooting better at the end of class than they are at the beginning of class.
Right.
Now, I just used the word better. What does better mean in this context? As soon as we use that word better, we start saying, okay, well, they're shooting more accurately. They're shooting more quickly. Perhaps we even measure whether they're better able to decide between a shoot and no shoot. We have a no shoot that's designated, but with the hands painted on the target, or maybe we have some other system for determining that. I've shot the LFI qual. Well, probably. I hate to think how many times over the past 17 years I've done it a lot. But that doesn't tell us if a person is better prepared to defend their own lives. We can give them a written test. We can give them a written test on what the law is. We can give them a written test on how well they're able to choose between multiple choice on, list the four rules, list the three rules, tell us how they're different from each other, whatever. We can give those things. But what we can't do is get inside the student and say, okay, now you're ready.
Right.
We just can't. And we can't even really define what better is in the context of what they themselves will actually need to know how to do. We can say, well, it's more probable that they'll need to do it at this distance than at that distance. It's more probable that they'll need to draw than that they won't need to draw. It's more probable that they will have family member around them than that they won't. We can make those types of judgments, but we can't absolutely say, and we never can. And it, because being able to say that would mean being able to see the future.
Well, but
here's where it gets tricky.
Yeah.
Humans are very uncomfortable with the idea of not being able to see the future.
Yes.
And so we make up religions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that all religions are false. That is not what I'm saying. I'm saying we make up religions that we get very emotionally attached to. Well, obviously, we have to know how to take a fight to the ground and grapple in close quarters. Obviously, we have to know how to shoot at X distance, where X distance becomes long. Or we have to know how to shoot in close quarters. Or we have to know how to deal with family members. Or we have to know how to do this or have to know how to do that. But each one of those have-tos comes out of our discomfort with not knowing whether or not we'll have to or not.
Well,
that makes sense.
It does, and I'm going to say two things, and then Michael is crawling out of his skin right now. And he, I'm gonna quote Will Petty, who's a friend of mine, and I've gotten to not only train with, but also help out at several of his classes. Risk is our currency, and we get to choose where we spend it. So, as instructors, We are giving our students our best guess and hoping that they are what they need to know. The other thing I will say too is that what we're really looking for when we train is assurance that we'll be okay. And
Yeah. There
are no assurances. I can tell you everything I know, and you can do everything right, and you can still die. And that makes people very uncomfortable, and it's not something that's a popular thing to even bring up inside of the training industry because it's defeatist and whatever. And I can't tell you the number of times where I've had somebody say to me, well, you never tell a student that they're effed. Like, you just don't ever tell them that. You want them to fight through. And it's like, yeah, I agree with that, but we also need to be honest and you know, let people know that sometimes there's not anything to be done. And I don't know. It's like this horrible, and I'm going to get hate mail over this, and people are going to be like, oh, man, that guy is an idiot. But I don't know. Anyway, what were you going to say, Michael?
Well, the whole thing with Kathy's on point. And since my background is mostly 90% law enforcement and 10% civilian, we dealt with it a little bit different. So we had instructors, firearm instructors teach, correct? And that's what firearm instructors do. So my part would be, I would look at it and say, you know, knowledge isn't power. We're pushing that on everyone. That's an old saying. Experience is power. So how do we give them experience? And in tactics, we entered SIMS.
Right.
So that was the way to tell if your training was actually absorbed. So even in a class, like Kathy's saying, even in a very basic class, after your 16 hours, the last few hours should be SIMS. It should go to that point. People should understand, because we're looking at the difference between teaching a male and teaching a female, since Kathy brought up gender. We look at that and we say there's a danger problem. Testosterone says, well, yeah, I can do that. I don't have to, you know.
Right.
They automatically say that in their own brains, but until you bring a sim in and you put them in the room and it occurs and they don't do it, and then you say, oh, or they're rolling around on the ground and someone's taking their gun out of their hand. You can't sit there and say, well, I would have done this. No. You got the opportunity and you got shot in the hand and you dropped your gun and you screamed and yelled and you ran out of the house. So that is a way to look at that and get an actual answer to, did they absorb the knowledge can they use the knowledge? Now, you brought up a great point saying, well, they may run scared from this and never take another class. And, well, the truth is you have to show them they're there for a reason. They're there to learn how to fire their weapon in an incident which may prevent serious bodily injury or death. So they're there for a reason. You have to, from the very beginning, deal with the actual reason that they're there and show them that, yeah, you can push yourself through this fight and you might win, you might lose. The difference is if we do it enough, if you do the sims enough, you'll feel better about it every time.
Right.
So Michael, question for you. As you're talking about testing your program through sims, how easy do you find it to design scenarios that perfectly match the experiences that your civilian self-defense people will be encountering?
Well, actually, Kathy, I think it's really simple. And I'll say that because that was my, for 10 years during tactics, that was my job, is to come up with those scenarios. So I think that if you sit down and you review shootings that occur, you can actually do that. It's not, I don't think it's that hard to come up with these scenarios and ask the people involved in the class these scenarios. What would you like to see? Develop things. One of the things that when I was working with civilians, I'd ask everybody to come in and give me some distances. What's the size of your bedroom? Tell me the longest part of your house. What's from one bedroom out the hallway into another bedroom? What are these distances? So you can set up things so that they can actually look at and say, oh, I feel confident shooting from this distance. Well, that's the distance in your bedroom, or that's the distance out to your hallway.
Well, and I got to interrupt because we got to go to break, and then we'll get right back in. This is great. We're talking with Kathy Jackson and Michael Grasso. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Vance, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Vance, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target. And what is beyond it? But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300 lumen sidekick to the 500 lumen X300 Ultra M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to use Z's light ever again. Doesn't matter if you're shining a light at a potential threat or just helping your friends see through their eyelids. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. Now is a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners. You can get 30% off everything at the Surefire.com web store, except suppressors and batteries, by entering the discount code ALLTHELUMENS, that is ALLTHELUMENS, at surefire.com. So we're talking with Kathy Jackson and Michael Grasso, and Melody Lauer is joining us as our co-host, and there may or may not be a Tamara Keel somewhere around here, but, you know, there's no actual evidence of that. So anyway, you had asked Michael about how you design scenarios, and you had given some examples. I'm going to say something real quick, and then I'd like to hear what you have to say too, Kathy. It seems to me that we can, you know, whether we're designing scenarios or curriculums or something like that, we can get really close. We can get close for 99% of anything that person is likely to see. And then really, Melody. Melody's phone alarm went off, and now she is shamed. What was that alarm for, out of curiosity?
That was for picking my daughter up from school.
Oh, do you need to leave?
Yes, I need to drive.
I think you're going to be like 9 hours late.
Yeah, I'm going to be a few minutes late.
I was saying something really important, and now I'm not. We can be right like 99% of the time, and we can get people close. But there's always that element of you're the first person to see this problem. And the thing about that is whenever that tends to happen, they tend to name things after you, and policy changes occur. And what you know, there's not really, there's not like a way to incorporate that particular aspect in the training unless someone has gone through like this robust training, whatever. And even then, that's not necessarily realistic to the resource expenditure that most people are willing to make, right? Kind of. That, I'm sorry, that was really rambling, and then Melody distracted me, and I tried to tie it back together, and I don't know if I did a good job or not.
I will say that and the question is, how easy is it to design scenarios? And the answer came back, it's simple. And this is simple for somebody who has a very wide experience and a deep depth of experience to plumb. But when we look at, by and large, the people who are teaching at the teaching vast majority of students, not the serious students who take classes from everybody, but the one-off student who's going to come take one class and they're done. The people teaching those people, for the most part, do not have the knowledge, the depth of experience to create good, solid, realistic Sims programs. They should, but they don't. And that's how we end up with, I think of them as religious factions, you know, holy wars and jihads between the different techniques and the different schools and the different schools of thought within the training industry.
I would actually argue that's how we end up with dead librarians in Punta Gorda, Florida, as people that are not qualified, probably never will be qualified,
yes,
have no interest in being qualified, doing, you know, things that are completely and utterly ridiculous. You know, and like, so personally, I've got about like 1,200 hours of private instruction at this point and professional development and whatever. And I don't feel comfortable setting up a Sims program for anybody. Like, not right now without putting quite a bit more thought into it than I ever have, you know? And I'm not saying that as like, you know, anybody that hasn't done what I've done isn't qualified, but it's just like, I think that that hesitation needs to exist for you to be a competent instructor. I don't know that that's a popular opinion or not, but it is my opinion.
Well, I think that right there is one of the reasons why I said initially it is so very hard to check to see if you've actually taught your students what they need to know.
Right.
Because there are very few people who have the depth of experience to make it simple to design good scenarios and to help their students draw the right lessons out of even a very well-designed scenario.
Yeah.
And this isn't at all to say that that's not what we should be doing. It's to say the practical hurdles for getting people to where they're able to create those types of programs, they're huge. And so we end up with strong opinions that aren't backed up by experience, that can't be tested for whatever reason, that haven't been tested. We end up with programs that have not bumped up against other people's programs. You know, they haven't gone head to head. You know, we don't have the firearms training world does not have the what do you call it, the MMA cage.
Yeah.
You know, we just don't. And even if we did, the cage was designed by particular people to test particular sets of knowledge and to favor particular solutions. So it does tend to be a bit tail chasing. But we have to keep in mind what the ultimate goal is, and that is to prepare people to defend themselves. I think a lot of times we get wrapped up in the individual metrics that we can measure, and we forget that big picture.
Well, and so you brought up like the shooting world does not have like the MMA cage. Somebody, you know, so I saw this on Claude Werner's page, and he was quoting Julie Thomas, who is a Range Master alumni, and whatever. But she said something I thought was really intelligent, which is, if you've got a rule, you've got a game. And you know, we can get into like the deeper implications of that or whatever. But it's the thing that, you know, there's like so many competing issues going on here. It's like where someone with like Michael's experience can be like, well, it's simple. And it is for you, Michael. I mean, it is very, very much. Whereas like, you know, I can speak intelligently on any several number of subjects. But if you were like realistically asking me to design a Sims program, could I come up with something good given enough time? Probably. I mean, at this point, I probably could.
And you would be smart enough to take it to people like Michael and say, is this good? And you would be smart enough to listen when they gave you feedback that maybe, you know, it's a rare person who wants to hear what they don't want to hear.
Yeah, well, you know, you are right. Historically, I probably would do that. But it's like, oh, compliments. I can't take those. Let's move past that. It's funny, though, because the thing that I think a lot of people miss out on, and this is a conversation I've had with Craig Douglas any number of times, is that while Sim and Force on Force is an incredibly valuable training tool, it has severe limitations that most people are not willing to recognize, and that is that when you're doing a Force on Force scenario, you know you're in a scenario. You know you're in a scenario. The role players know they're in a scenario. The reactions are different than they would be in real life, and that bugs people because, well, it's not repeatable, so or it's not measurable, or it's not science. And I agree with that hesitation, but there is a certain element of not only chance but chaos that is really hard to recreate anywhere. And we got about a minute left if someone wants to say something to that, and then we'll hop into the next segment.
If I could jump in, two things I wanted to talk about what Kathy said, but what you just finished, the trick to that is that once you put the helmet on, that you don't get into a shooting. See, the trick is that I put my helmet on means I'm going to get into a shooting. I know it's going to be a shooting. I know how this is going to end up. You know, there's going to be X amount of guys. Well, for us, the way we handled it was you wore your helmet for the 8 hours, you see, and then you might go through 15 scenarios, and out of the 15 scenarios, you might actually you drew your weapon 10 times, but you only got into one shooting. So that was the trick to kind of – to alleviate what you were saying is the problem.
Right. Let's hold that thought because we got to go to break, and then we'll get right back into it. Right now we're talking with Kathy Jackson from The Cornered Cat and also Michael Grasso. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host. Oh, wait, we already did that part. I was just talking about how weird it gets when we record multiple episodes and then things get out of order. Anyway, we're talking with Kathy Jackson, Michael Grasso. I interrupted you to go to the commercial. You had another... Oh, I know what I was going to say. You said you had people wear the helmet for 8 hours. The issue with that is that and this is where it gets really interesting, and I'm getting excited. It gets really interesting in what, like, your background is and your experience, because that is not realistic for most private citizens, not because it's not a good idea, because most of them just don't want to do it and wouldn't. You know, would you agree with that, Kathy?
I think it is very difficult to sell any type of force-on-force class to private citizens.
Yeah.
Yeah, people don't want to know that they can't do something.
Well, Melody's got something to say here.
Well, I really think that there is a middle ground that can be reached. I do in my one of the classes that I teach, and I only have 4 hours to do classes, which is an extraordinarily short period of time. But in one of the classes that I do a guided scenario where basically you are put into a very, very simple blue gun scenario that you are allowed to push pause on at any time. Like, if you get up to a place where you're like, I don't know what to do here, you can pause and think about it. And the reason I do that is because, one, it introduces them to the idea that, wow, this is a lot more difficult to think through and stuff like that with a gun in my hand. And I've got to be thinking about legalities. I got to be thinking about talking to this person. I got to be thinking about the information I'm receiving. But it doesn't overwhelm them to the point of like, okay, you're in this scenario, go, and it's live, and you know, you got to make all these decisions. And I've gotten really good feedback on that because they can stop the scenario and look at me and go, what do I do now? And instead of giving them answers, I will say, well, what are your options? Well, what did we learn today? What do you know about lethal force, and can you use it here or can't you use it here? And it is, I have found that with my students, and these are civilians, these aren't law enforcement, these aren't, you know, anything like that, that it is a really gentle way to introduce them to these concepts. Sometimes they shoot, sometimes they don't shoot. You know, and by shoot, I mean like bang, bang, you know, I used a gun here. But it's not a difficult scenario, and it's not something that I'm like, okay, we're ninjas are falling out of the ceiling or anything like that. Or the scenario. But I think that that becomes kind of a middle ground between something like an ECQC where you're going, you know, full force with someone, or like you're saying, Michael, you know, you're wearing a helmet and you're geared up for getting into a shooting anytime. And the brand new person is who's like, I don't even know what this looks like. It's a bridge between that gap. And I don't know, I've seen very few programs like that where it's really guided and really gentle. And I don't know if that's a good middle ground that more people could do, but it's something that I have done that has been successful.
Melody, I love that description of what you're doing. I have a question for you.
Sure.
In your course descriptions, as you're selling the class, are you including the idea that, oh, we'll do force on force?
No.
Or is it a bait and switch? Because I do bait and switch. I'll tell you flat out, I do.
Yeah, I don't use the term force on force, because when people see the term force on force, they think blows against blows.
It's not technically force on force anyway.
Yeah,
there's
it's
no
not,
force.
Because there's
guided,
no contact.
Guided scenario.
It's a guided scenario. That's exactly the term I use. It's a there will be guided scenarios. And most of the time, people have no idea what that means. And so they're like, oh, okay, guided scenario, sure, I'll go to that. And once they get into it, they're like, wow, that was really difficult. But no one is scared of like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to get shot up by Sims, or someone's going to punch me in the head, or, you know, kick me or something like that, you know.
Or I'm going to make a stupid mistake and everybody will laugh at me.
Yes.
I think that's even a bigger fear than even getting physically harmed.
Mm-hmm. And that's very true. That is very true. I mean, I've seen some people go through the scenarios and they'll watch the people in front of me, and maybe someone will do something. I don't want to use the term stupid because it's a learning experience, but they'll do something questionable and I'll talk to them about it. And they're like, well, I don't want to do that. And I'm like, don't worry about doing that. It's a learning point. You know, it's okay. This is the environment to do that.
Well, and I'll tell you, the thing that helped me most in my career was when I got over looking dumb in front of other people. Like, once I really got comfortable looking dumb in front of other people, I became much more successful. I make a lot of money looking dumb in front of other people. And I'm okay with that, you know? So
in order to get good, you have to get over your fear of not looking good.
I'm not good, and probably will never be my idea of good. But so that's the other thing too, is like what is good, and what many people don't realize is that good for you should be a carrot that's about a yard out in front of you, that is constantly a yard out in front of you. And
cool.
if it's not, I would argue that you're doing this wrong if you're interested in really progressing. If all the interest you have in this is I own a gun and I don't want to hurt someone I don't mean to hurt, then honestly, you don't need to be very good to accomplish that. Good, you know, good is like for people that are taking this. I'm going to use the word a hobbyist about this, and that's like used as an insult by many people, but honestly, I agree with that. It is a hobby for me. It's a hobby. It's a career now, but like, it's a hobby too. And there's a delineation there. I don't know if any of that just made sense or not. So,
you know, Kathy brought up something that's really interesting, and that is there's a tendency for new instructors to be teaching new students. And I think it should be the opposite way.
I'll agree with you.
The most experienced instructors should be the ones that are teaching the newest students. If you're a new instructor, I'd rather put you on the line in a mid-class where you're with people that already understand the fundamentals and you're just helping them along with that. But if you're a real, and it comes back, I think I talked to John on the break, and that is one of the things that I noticed when I first became an instructor at the academy was that only the most experienced and high-level instructors were allowed to interact with the recruit officers. And that's because that fingerprint, like you talked about, putting a fingerprint on somebody was done by someone who actually understood how to do it. More so than just being a firearms instructor. Going to regular instructor schools, you should be able to teach cooking. You could teach polo. It doesn't matter. You should be able to teach anything. If you're a good instructor, you understand the concept of instructing. And then when you get the young student, you can do this. But to me, we fail as instructors when we allow young instructors to deal with young students. We really have a responsibility to that young student to put the most experienced people in front of them, because that's what they need. They need to be handheld, which is fine. They need to have guided scenarios. That's fine. They need to have people with experience. They need to have female instructors with female experience and male instructors with male experience. And honestly, it's good to have someone that's been involved in an OIS or some type of civilian shooting to be there to explain, look, I'm here. I made it through. This was my life experience, and you can make it through. It can happen. It's hard, but I really believe that experience is power. So get the experienced people to teach.
And that's a great place to end. I have other things I want to say, but we're out of time, darn it. So, Kathy, thank you so much for staying with us and doing another episode. Michael, thank you for being here. This was really cool. Melanie, thank you.
Thank you.
Tamara, thank you. You can wave. She was offering moral support.
Bye, Tamara.
Yeah, right. So, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/ballisticradio. And hey, keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Helps us out. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.